Okay, we're on.
Thank you. Today's July 12th, 2018. This is the quarterly committee meeting for the Henderson County Animal Services Advisory Committee. May I ask one of the committee members to please make a motion that we go into public hearing, public meeting?
I'll make a motion.
Second?
I second.
We're now in public meeting. Thank you, everyone, for coming in. Brad, do you have anything you want to start with? Or
As far as attendance, at the April meeting, if you were not here, will you let me? I know that you were not here. Was everybody else here? Do y'all remember if James Varble was here? I think he was here.
He was here.
Okay. All right. I didn't write it down last meeting. I just wanted to make sure. So.
Okay.
That's all I've got.
Let's start on one end. For anybody listening, let's introduce ourselves.
I'm Carol Roop.
Catherine Overstreet.
Tricia McDuff.
I'm John Lynn.
Johnny Young.
Brian Joel.
Paul Blackwell.
Jack Walsh.
And we have with us Brad Rayfield, who's the director of the animal shelter for Henderson County. So at this time, we'll start off with public comment.
Public comment?
Okay.
Just state your name, Audrey.
Absolutely. So my name is Audrey Lodato, and I am the Director of Animal Care for Brother Wolf Animal Rescue. What my job is to work with municipal shelters to help them improve their animal care practices. And I'm here today because of a pilot program that Brad has helped me put in place regarding a mother cat of some kittens. And you should have, hopefully, a proposal. John, were you able to get that to everybody?
Brad sent it out in an email.
Okay. And so I wanted to comment on the backstory of this proposal and then just give you a quick outline of it. Brother Wolf, Henderson County chapter, our chapter manager there was Eva Cruz-Schultz, was contacted by Henderson County Animal Services about some orphan kittens. And that's common. We have a good relationship with Henderson County Shelter. They contact us often. These kittens happen to be very young. And so Eva agreed to take in the kittens. And when she arrived to pick the kittens up, she asked what had happened to the mother cat. And we were unfortunately told that the mother cat was going to be euthanized because of her behavior, because she was fractious. And Eva asked permission to please intake the mother cat as well. And we were, denied that. And so our field operations manager, who's also our feral cat expert, unfortunately he couldn't be here tonight, Eric, called again, and between some back and forth, we were able to basically get a hold placed on the cat, and we did eventually come to an agreement to be able to pull the cat to see if we could rehabilitate her. Why I'm here tonight is I'd just like to express to you all that part of the work that Brother Wolf does is to rehabilitate animals that, county shelters don't have the resources to work with. And it's understandable that county shelters don't have the resources to work with those animals. That's not what their purpose is. The county shelter's job is to, take the animals, assess them, adopt animals out to the public, and keep the public safe. However, a lot of times, animals are rehabilitatable and placeable for adoption. Brother Wolf happens to be in the unique situation where we have a behavior and enrichment department with some very, very qualified people who run it, three CPDT trainers, who have extensive background in just doing rehabilitation, along with a very complex behavior and enrichment program. And we rehabilitate to the tune of about 3,000 animals a year. So, it's great. So this proposal, what it does is make some suggestions to the way your ordinances are written to see if we can maybe make a change to them. Because right now, your ordinances kind of classify all adoptions under one thing. So whether an animal goes to an adoptive home or an animal is released to a rescue organization, that's considered an adoption. It's not really quite the same thing. There's some liability differences for y'all, and there's some differences for the rescue taking it in as well. So there's just some suggested changes in this proposal. The first of which is just that you differentiate between releasing to a rescue and an adoption. And it basically just
I'm sorry, question? I thought you were reading from something that we had.
We don't have that, but they don't have that.
Oh, okay. So
that proposal, huh?
You have not received it.
What we had for discussion tonight was the contract between Henderson County has set
okay.
up between y'all and them.
Okay.
As far as taking animals out.
Okay.
And we weren't prepared tonight to discuss any changes like that.
Okay.
Because we were, and I'll explain that here in just a minute.
Okay.
Well, I guess I can explain it now.
Sure.
Basically, because this is a pilot program, and mm-hmm. we were going to see how this went with this particular cat
sure.
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
If it worked out fine, then we were going to be fine with bringing it up at the next meeting.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
And saying that, okay, this is an ordinance change that mm-hmm. we may need to address.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to address it at this meeting simply mm-hmm. because we don't have enough background on how this animal is going to do.
Sure. Okay,
but
that's
absolutely
reasonable.
Still, we can. What we are going to talk about, though, mm-hmm. is what has happened
mm-hmm.
and the background on the cat
mm-hmm.
and where it's at now
mm-hmm.
and what your proposal is. So
okay.
as far as the intricacies of the changing ordinance and all that,
mm-hmm.
That's not for tonight's meeting for us. We
okay.
can't consider that tonight. But the reason being for that is because if this turns out to be not successful
mm-hmm.
and if the animal services in Henderson County decides to discontinue this program,
mm-hmm.
then we don't want to waste time
mm-hmm.
Out of everybody's schedule discussing changes to an ordinance that we're never going to make.
Sure, that's
so
that's reasonable.
What we're basing this on. But feel free and continue because we'll
yeah.
still end up getting into that in the future. But I want you to know that ahead mm-hmm. of time.
And it's good that you're laying the groundwork.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah,
so at least, this way that you guys will understand, what our capacity is and why it's different than the municipal shelter, why a rescue organization is different. And we work with, many, many counties around North Carolina, South Carolina, and then also through our rapid response work to rehabilitate animals. And every county has different ordinances. You guys have some kind of vague language when it comes to adoption and separating those processes out. So this proposal actually is very, very simple. It delineates the difference between the two and gives Brad permission to release an animal to rescue at his discretion. And then there's also a definition change. Because you have a very strange definition in your ordinances for Haven, and the North Carolina Standard is approved rescue organization, so I put that in there. That may be something that you consider doing regardless. Okay?
If you have anything that you could make available...
Absolutely.
I mean, I would take any information with me,
mm-hmm.
and then the next time, or mm-hmm. when we have the opportunity to discuss it, then I'll have something in my head.
Sure. I did bring some copies with me tonight, and I can also email.
Good.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Okay,
sure.
Then now I'll listen to you.
Okay. So we did start the pilot program, and I'm sure Brad will give information on that, but we did end up taking the mother cat in, and I'll just give you a quick update on how she's doing. So the pilot program basically allows us to rehabilitate this cat for the purpose of adoption. Her name is Evelyn. We aged her at about 1.5 is what we ended up with.
Okay.
And she's a sweet cat, a little bit scared. She's at Eric's house, Eric, our feral cat guy right now. He's also fostering some kittens. She's super excited to see the kittens, and she's doing well. She's making definite progress toward being socialized. So we can, root for her. She's doing good, and I think it's going to have a good positive outcome. Mm-hmm.
Where's she located at?
She's at our field operation manager's house. A lot of times when an animal comes in needing severe rehabilitation like this, from one extreme to another, we will place with staff or with a specially trained foster. Eric himself happens to have a real soft spot for fractious mother cats. That's just a thing he likes. Actually, Eric and I had a little bit of a argument over who was going to get her, but he won.
Joint custody. Huh?
Yeah, we have joint custody at the moment. But she's doing well.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
What's your plan moving forward from here with her?
With her. So the rehabilitation process tends to be really slow for an animal like this. So that is one thing that you can know. It can take 6 months. That's not uncommon. It usually starts with positive reinforcement in the form of food, so a high-value food. You know, she's a cat, so stuff like chicken, tuna, that kind of thing, every day. And then eventually mixing that interaction with, you know, vocalization. So it could be you're talking to her. It could be the food on the radio or the TV or whatever. And then we usually use some kind of device to start with touch. I don't know what Eric's got at the adoption center. He's like those long back scratchers, the extendable ones. And so you kind of combine all of those things until she's used to the combination of it. And generally what happens is they begin to just understand, because all aggression is fear. Every bit of aggression is fear. So once they begin to understand, oh, you're not scary, they very quickly lose the aggression. And they're like, oh, you bring me chicken, you're all right. And once they understand that, then it's basically about building relationships. So right now, you know, all she knows is, well, Eric brings me chicken. I don't know about this chick, you know. So then somebody else will be introduced, and then somebody else, and then somebody else. And at some point, we'll probably want to transition her to, like, a more active foster home, and I guess we'll talk about that at that point. Maybe a home that has multiple adults living in it or a busier kind of situation so she can acclimate to that. Once she's through that, she should be placeable. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
She's taking care of her kittens.
She was actually separated from her kittens. Her kittens ended up going to a different rescue.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So she's there are kittens in the house, but they're another mommy's kittens. The mommy from McDowell County, actually.
What happens if you get one of the cats that cannot be rehabilitated?
So the pilot program does say that we would return the cat for euthanasia. An alternative that I would pose to you all to consider for the future is we have a working cat program that we utilize with many other counties. And what a working cat is exactly what it sounds like. You have a factory and you don't want mice in it, and you have a brewery, you know, in Asheville, and you don't want mice in it, you adopt a working cat. So that cat is it's an adoption, the outcome's adoption, and they, you know, make sure there's no mice in your building, provide pest control. Usually those cats will kind of come around, maybe not to the capacity of, like, being a pet, but some kind of socialization where they will form attachments with the people who work in the factory and what have you. The people who adopt the cat are responsible for providing medical care, you know, including vaccinations and all of that, and the cats just kind of live happily in those situations. So we place working cats commonly in Buncombe County, tons, also in Rutherford County, also in McDowell County.
I think a big concern, and obviously it's that you're aware of this. I think a biggest concern would be liability for Henderson County, and also compliance with state health laws where those are concerned.
Could you elaborate a little on that?
Liability as far as, well, you know, he's your contract, the pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's been changed to reflect, to show that, you know, you're, of course, responsible. There's actually some added caveats in there versus a regular adoption contract. Also, North Carolina state law says that we can't, you know, no county in North Carolina is supposed to release a pet into an environment to where it could come in contact with an animal that's possibly carrying rabies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we have to take into consideration. That's something the county has to take into consideration. So if one of the animals we release to you, it's obviously going to be tagged and chipped and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If we release that animal to Brother Wolf and it's not able to be rehabbed,
mm-hmm.
if it goes into a working cat program, which I think is great, okay? But if wherever you place it is not a place where they're going to reasonably assume responsibility to the point that they're going to make sure that the cat's not, you know, going to get it's, in other words, it's not to be an outdoor cat. It should stay within the confines of wherever it's at. How do you guarantee that with wherever you place them at?
Well, I guess my first question would be, do you require all of your adopted cats to be indoor cats?
No, but these are this is a special situation, though, because it's a cat that otherwise the county would have euthanized to keep from having the liability of having something like that happen. In other words, it's not acclimated totally to being around people, people friendly and all that, to where you could, you know, maintain the confine with it? Does that make sense?
So I guess I don't. Mm-hmm. What I'm hearing you say, and you tell me if I'm correct, is that it's because the cat's not socialized to people, it would be more difficult to keep the cat in an indoor environment?
Well, like Sergeant Blackwell said, the cat's still considered feral when we release it to you.
Sure.
So from our standpoint, from the legal standpoint of the county, they're releasing a cat that has been deemed feral by Animal Services. And that places it in a different category than an adoptable cat.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
It does. Let me see if I can't address some of those concerns. So sure. There's...
Can I interrupt?
Mm-hmm.
Can I speak?
Oh, absolutely. Please. Thank you.
So what one of my concerns was with this program is, number one, when a cat comes in, it doesn't have feral cat stamped on its head.
Mm.
Some cats are scared. Some cats just take extra time that we don't have the resources to provide that groups like Brother Wolf is offering to provide. You know, this cat could have very easily went there, you know, on, you know, day 7 after it had been at the shelter, and it might already be adoptable because it may have not truly been a feral cat.
Mm.
I think this cat probably would fall into the feral category. But I think as far as from the public health, what my concern is, and I don't know if this is the same concern that John is sharing right now, we do adopt out dogs, cats that we know are going to be outside animals. So the difference between putting them into a feral cat colony or a working cat colony where they're outside, you're creating an environment where they're sharing territory with other wild animals, and there are multiple cats out there in most of these situations. When other people have outside animals, you can routinely inspect these animals and make sure they've not been bitten, not came in contact with something that's potentially has rabies. When you got a colony of say 15 working cats or 5, I don't know what y'all's typical size is.
But you can't
is there somebody that can lay hands on them and look back at them and make sure that they haven't been exposed?
Sure. So let me address a few of those things. The first thing that I would say is that feral, to Brad's point, well made, it's a spectrum. Very often one of the issues that municipal shelters have when they're assessing animals is exactly what Brad said. A shelter environment's not conducive to the natural behavior of animals. So it's very difficult to understand, you know, where that cat falls. It's kind of just not like feral or social. It's a whole spectrum, and the cat may fall anywhere in between. Just like people, you know, no people are one way. so there's that to consider. The other thing I want to address is that a working cat environment and a managed TNR colony are two really different situations. A working cat is an outcome of adoption. And in the state of North Carolina, a feral cat colony would be an outcome of return to field. Okay, so that's two completely different things. Return to field is not legal in North Carolina, although there are certainly many counties that do it. Working cat adoptions are, because it's considered an adoption. And that all is sort of reconciled on the national standard of how intakes and adoptions are tracked, which is called an Asilomar Accord. You can see the Asilomar Accord for Brother Wolf on our website if you'd kind of like an example of what that breaks down for. Most shelters make that publicly available. I don't know if you guys have yours online. A lot of times to get grant money, it has to be sort of public. But a working cat is definitely an adoption. Brother Wolf does support our working cat placements by providing medical care. We do it, gosh, all day long. If, you know, somebody at, you know, New Belgium Brewery, you know, Fluffy the working cat has an injured paw and they can't round him up to get to the vet, you know, Brother Wolf staff's going out there and we're going to, you know, catch him. And we would provide that same service to y'all.
And really, if it's okay with everybody, this is knocking this part of our agenda because I think we're spending a lot of time on it. And we won't really need to go over this. You guys can look at it, and if you have questions about it, you can email me. But the concerns that I outlined as far as rabies is concerned, this right here is solely designed so that I made sure that I wasn't releasing a cat that would ultimately go into an environment where I thought it could be exposed to rabies and be a threat to public health. That's this right here. Sets that cat into those parameters, right, Audrey?
It does. Yeah, and if you were interested, and I can certainly send this on, in rabies statistics in relationship to feral cats, there's a national feral cat organization called Alley Cat Allies that is sort of the national standard for tracking these kind of metrics. It's very, very, very low exposure to rabies in feral cat colonies even, and I'm happy to pass that information on to you. I mean, so low that I would almost call it non-existent as a problem in the country.
The only thing I heard you say that made me kind of is it was totally Brad's discretion.
Well, and I was going to, yeah.
Sure.
And that puts an enormous amount of life.
Well, and right now, and we've been working with Brother Wood for a while, and Eva would know this, but we do delineate the transfer to rescues mm-hmm. versus adoptions, and the contracts are different.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've never released a cat to a rescue that was as bad as, I don't want to say bad because I don't want to, yeah, but had the behavioral characteristics that she had to a rescue. Mm-hmm. That was out of what I've ever done, and so I mm-hmm. found it. So going forward, I can create the policy where I'm doing these transfers, and we don't have to have it. I've checked with Russ, who's the county attorney, and he's comfortable with, you know, me making it a policy where I can delineate a transfer from an adoption mm-hmm. without it being in the. But now, if this to Jack's point, I don't know that I wouldn't mind having something in there to protect me on that. So, yeah, mm-hmm. good point. You're thinking, Jack's thinking about protecting me versus, you know.
Sure.
But,
and Don was talking about the county's perspective and the liability of the county is against him.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't, but last meeting or the meeting before, we were talking about these branch off municipalities trying to formulate rules from zero to what we have here, because we have a pretty solid, established county ordinance towards mm-hmm. a broad spectrum of animals, from farm to feral.
Sure. Can I ask, what is the specific liability that is your concern? Is it just rabies?
Ask Ken. He's been on the news, not me.
That was going to be my question also, not only to the respect of rabies. If one of the working cats escapes, bites someone, we can't find it, and some child has to go through the rabies vaccines, who's going to be responsible?
Well,
if the working cat is on the mm-hmm. premises and bites someone, who's going to be responsible for that?
So what I would say is that you can't predict behavior of any animal at any time.
No, absolutely not. That's why I asked the question.
It's a good question. It really is. And a feral cat is actually probably less likely, honestly, to bite a person than a domesticated cat, because a feral cat, truly feral, not socialized people, doesn't want to be messed with. And so when a kid comes up to the cat's just going to go. And the instances that we see of them being bit are really low, whereas we commonly see domesticated cats bite people. That happens very frequently. But just like with any animal, the liability would rest on the ownership of the animal. So if it's a brewery and it's their working cat, it is considered an adoption. So it's their animal, and that's where the liability lies, just like if their dog bites someone.
Who considers it?
You said
it's considered an adoption. So who considers it? Are you actually adopting the cat out, or mm-hmm. are you fostering the cat?
It would be an adoption. So the contract truly is an adoption contract. Through Brother Wolf, it's a different contract than our standard you're taking this animal home for a pet contract. And the way that it's different is that it actually is more specific in delineating this is what's expected with vet care, this is what's expected with handling, this animal is not a pet. You know, it covers many, many things. And I'm also happy to send you all of our working cat protocols so that you can see sort of what a functional working cat program looks like. And we also have many just clients who have working cats at different breweries that I'm sure would be happy to talk to y'all. We just placed actually four today from Rutherford County.
Audrey, let me give you something. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk?
No.
Oh, okay. Let me go to an extreme here, okay?
Sure.
Because this is an extreme scenario for you, but it's a possible scenario,
mm-hmm.
okay? Here's where we're talking about liability for the county in mm-hmm. this. just exactly what Paul said about a small child getting bit, okay? I'm with you on the feral cats don't want to be around other people, so the likelihood of somebody getting mm-hmm. bit by one is slim to none unless they're pestering it or get it cornered up or something.
Mm-hmm.
What he's talking about and what Brad's talking about and what my initial question was, what if one of the cats gets loose, okay? And maybe it could be due to negligence, or it could just be due to it being a cat.
Mm-hmm.
It gets loose, it contracts rabies. If it contracts rabies, okay, mm-hmm. a cat that has contracted rabies is not going to act like a feral cat. I'm going to take off in the corner. They're not in their right mind. There runs the possibility of them biting someone. If a child gets bit mm-hmm. by a cat that contracts rabies that we've released into this program
mm-hmm.
and they're put into an open environment like that,
mm-hmm.
if they take that cat, okay, it's going to be euthanized if it's rabid. Once they euthanize it, they're going to find a tracking chip in it.
Mm-hmm.
That tracking chip's going to be traced right back to the county where we released it to begin with. How does that's where we're talking about the liability issue right there, because it's going to go back to the source. And could they, you know, when they sue us for $1 million,
uh-huh.
they're going to say, why did you release it to begin with?
Okay, so a few things. One, the first thing is there hasn't been a case of cat-to-human rabies transmission since 1976. So that's one thing to know. It's not, so the chances of it happening are, again, almost zero. Two, the cats will be vaccinated for rabies because we vaccinate all of our cats. So working cats are held to the same adoption standard as any cat that we would adopt. And the requirement is the same, meaning that if you adopt a working cat from us or you adopt Fluffy the kitten from us, you're expected to vaccinate that cat for rabies. Now, in the state of North Carolina, the compliance rate for owners keeping up with rabies is not very good. And that, you know, means in all of your adoptions, I would say probably 50% of the cats that you have adopted in the course of the history of your shelter are probably not current on their rabies vaccine. So, again, because it's a feral cat versus because it's a domesticated cat, no difference. Thirdly, microchip would actually be registered through Brother Wolf. So that would not be. It would come to us, not to you.
Excuse me, I missed your first point, 1976.
Six. Last time there was a cat-to-human rabies transmission?
Transmission.
I don't think so. I believe we had a cat-to-human transfer when I first started in this unit.
Now, when she says transmission, she means it manifests and the person actually got the virus, not that they just were exposed to it. Is that what you're speaking
of?
Yeah.
We had an elderly lady who was exposed to a rabid cat by a bite.
I'm not saying that there's not been an exposure, but an actual transmission, it long time ago.
But I think one point that John is making, though, is if somebody is exposed and they have to go through the post-exposure prophylaxis,
mm-hmm.
we all know what that cost entails, mm-hmm. and not to mention the emotional
mm-hmm.
Part of it. But
and not only that, we just recently went to a class with the state veterinarian, and we do know that cats are the highest domestic animal that carries rabies. I understand that they're going to be inoculated. They're going to have the rabies vaccine. But if one of the animals escapes, if it gets away, it is chipped. How long is that rabies vaccine going to last after the expiration date?
Sure.
Which
so
I know the titers. I know about the titers.
Right.
I understand that
mm-hmm.
a one year shot may last 1 year. It may last 2 years, mm-hmm. maybe three.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What happens after that?
Well, again, it's the same for any cat that would be considered a working cat versus a cat that would be considered a domesticated cat. So there's not any differentiation between...
I think that's what I'm asking. I think that's where I'm seeing the difference here. It's like, okay, you call it a working cat, you send it out and it works. Well, what if they say, hey, this is not working for us, we don't want the cat, we're going to return it to you.
Mm-hmm.
But they are considered the owner. Is that what you're telling us? That they're considered the owner if something happens while that cat's mm-hmm. with them? That's their cat.
It's their cat. And then should they return the animal to us, about the microchip, so there's a process where a microchip would be cleared and re-registered. Normally how it works is it's implantation, so that's who purchased the microchip, and then implanted the microchip, which would be us, because you guys wouldn't be in the business of chipping those cats. That would be us, so that's one line of contact. and then the microchip is registered to the company who sells the microchip. So that could be, like in our instance, sometimes we use 24 Pet Watch, sometimes we use Home Again. There's a primary contact and a secondary contact. Brother Wolf's policy is to list ourselves as the secondary contact and the owners as the first. If the animal gets returned to us, we call and update the chip. That owner is removed, and if we replace the cat, the chip is re-registered to the new owner. I hope that answers your question.
I'm not so sure we should be focusing, number one, on if it can be tracked back to us. If we don't think we should be doing it, then it shouldn't be done. We shouldn't be thinking, and I'm not trying, you know, I'm just saying from a county perspective, we shouldn't be saying, well, if it can't be tracked to us, well, who cares, you know.
That's not what I'm asking, because it can be tracked. There's no doubt that it
can. Yeah, oh, I know.
In a court of law, if something like this comes up, and I believe we're dealing with something like similar to this now, reference a dog bite that happened here in the county with a dog that came from another county to Brother Wolf, and then it came here and bit someone, a very serious bite, a disfiguring, very serious bite. That's going to be tracked. It'll be tracked back to the county either way.
Mm-hmm.
When you're saying feral, when you're calling a cat feral, I think you're setting yourself up for a liability. That's what I'm hearing here. I think it's setting the county up for a liability. That's what it appears to be.
I guess you know the way that I would respond to that is just that there are many, many, many counties all across the country who do this program without any issue.
That'd make it right.
Well, that's interesting.
Has there been any problems with it? Has there been any problems at all?
Can I say that every working cat program ever in the history of the United States has been perfect? No, of course I can't say that. I'm sure I don't know of a specific problem. I'm sure somewhere there's been a problem. It would be ridiculous for me to say no. However, I can say that the instances are very low and that we've been placing working cats in Buncombe County for, 11 years now. We've never had a problem. We've probably placed, a couple hundred a year. We've never had an issue. And, the law enforcement in Buncombe County is actually very supportive of the program. So if it's helpful to speak to some of the law enforcement in Buncombe County, that might be, an arrangement that I can make if y'all want to meet with them at a different time to kind of talk through, pros and cons.
We're familiar with those
offices. Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, I'm sure that you probably know them.
Small world, isn't that
business? Yeah, well, it's like animal welfare. Everybody knows everybody.
And I don't want to get too far off the beaten path here, too, but I know we've been talking a lot about working cat programs.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a possibility that these rehabilitated cats actually go into someone's home?
Oh, absolutely. If a cat, like Evelyn.
And also, let me just interject here real quick, and you can answer all this together. Who makes that? I'm sure it's the rehabilitator. It makes that determination as to where this cat goes, as to the degree that they're rehabilitated. Right?
Well, I mean, I think like any adoption, you would make the decision about what's an appropriate placement, right? So if you have a cat that, say, really doesn't like dogs and is going to go after dogs, you wouldn't then adopt that cat to home with dogs. If you had a cat that maybe was skittish around young children, you wouldn't put that cat in that home. So every adoption that we do is, based on the situation of the animal. And again, not all animals are the same. In the contract that we have working with Brad and Evelyn, the pilot cat that we'll call her, our intention is to take the time to rehabilitate her completely so that she is just a regular house cat. And, again, all aggression is fear. Once they lose the fear, they lose the aggression, and we will have no issue placing her. It's just going to, be a process to get her to that point. Working cats are different than that. Where working cats come in is when you want to stop the mass euthanasia of cats that you consider feral. And at the moment, those cats that are coming into your facility are being euthanized. Just to be clear, those animals are being killed. And there are a significant amount of animals coming through your facility that are feral cats that are being killed. And this is a way that you can stop that.
Yeah. We're familiar.
And I guess before we get too far off from that point, I guess this is where it kind of comes full circle for me. So essentially, in terms of a liability issue, it's the rehabilitator that will actually be making the decision in terms of where to place the cat.
Are you speaking specifically about the cat from the pilot program, or are you speaking generally?
In generality, because I would assume, and again, I don't want to get too far ahead of this whole thing, as we've already discussed, but you know, just assuming that that's kind of what we're trying to accomplish here, or determine what we want to accomplish, that would eventually be something that would come up. So essentially we're looking toward Brother Wolf's rehabilitator to determine possible liability issues.
So basically again, every animal is different, but our normal adoption process encompasses, so the animal would be listed on our website for adoption available, and, you know, if it's a normal cat, there's no reason she can't be also in our adoption center listed, you know, so people can meet her or whatever. Anybody who's interested would fill out an application. They would meet with an adoption counselor. That's their sole job. That's all these people do. What they do is they have a conversation with them and also review their application. So they would say, okay, well, you have a house with four toddlers under the age of five and three dogs, and, you know, this cat is this way, and maybe this is not a good fit. So, no, you can't adopt this cat. And then maybe the next person who wants to adopt the cat is, like, you know, a couple, and they have a very quiet apartment and don't mind that the cat wishes to be by themselves. And so, yes, you know, that cat would go to them. So it's difficult for me to answer your question about, you know, a specific instance, because every animal is handled circumstantially. But in general, at Brother Wolf, our adoption counselors handle the adoptions. They do that in partnership with the behavior team to determine what's going to be the best home for the animal. The rehabilitator, or the foster who had the cat, would provide their input to the behavior team and to the adoption counselors, and all of that info would be considered to make the decision.
Okay. I mean, I guess, and I was just kind of wondering, because a lot of what we've been talking about are these working cat programs.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume that theoretically these cats could go into a home something.
I mean, I don't think that a cat that was placed as a true working cat would end up in a home.
Not placed as a working cat, but a feral cat that was released from Henderson County to you guys, rehabilitated,
and then
goes into a home?
Yeah, that's just a cat. That wouldn't be considered a working cat. A working cat is a cat that is not socialized to people, who is adopted for the intent of being a working cat. So it's an adoption, and it's a cat that's not socialized. In the instance of what we're doing here, we're rehabilitating the cat so that she can go to a home with people.
Hattie, you had something.
Well, again, I appreciate the discussion today, but I feel in a part like everybody's on a different plane for me, because I guess your reputation, your organization's reputation, in my eyes, precedes you. And I worked with Brad for 8 or 9 years, and we're talking about the possibility of saving the life of an animal. I guess that's kind of like easy science for me. And I respect, you know, what your organization has done. Certainly you're not going to make rash or foolish decisions. And I know Brad, you know, well enough to know that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's thinking, obviously, for the welfare of the animal and for the welfare of our community. So I think as a board member, as a committee member, if we need to alter the ordinance or discuss a change in the ordinance so as to make this type of program, you know, viable, yes, I can see discussion at that level. But right now, today, I just feel the introduction of the plan, to me, sounds fabulous. Again, anything to save. And you're right, you know, these animals are killed, euthanized, you know, put a nice name on it, but they're killed. And if we can save some animals through rehabilitation or, you know, whatever, your efforts, that's all good to me.
Thank you. I'll say that, too, Brother Wolf's programs are not made up by Brother Wolf. Like, these are not programs that Brother Wolf has invented. These are programs that are national standards. So that's another thing that y'all should know, is that these programs are informed by national standards in the animal welfare community and informed by, you know, the larger organizations, ASPCA, Best Friends, Humane Society of the United States, whose mission is to end shelter killing in the United States. And so we model all of our programs, including our working program, after those programs.
Let's see how the pilot program goes and launch from there.
In our discussion.
I hope it works out. I really do.
I do too.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate you guys taking the time to hear me out. And I'm available, you know, by email, phone. Brad has all of my contact information if any of you would like more information. Okay.
And conversely, our meetings are open meetings.
Yeah.
Anytime anybody from Brother Wolf or yourself, if you want to attend our meetings.
Sure.
Please.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invite.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, we've got that off the...
Are we going to check that one off?
Yeah, we can check that one off. So we'll do a amendment to the agenda.
She that was a little black calico too.
What? Tortoiseshell.
Yeah.
Tortoiseshell. I had the opportunity to see her. I was at the animal shelter before you got her, mm-hmm. and I actually had the opportunity to see her and everything. She's a real pretty little girl.
She is real pretty.
Yeah, I hope she works out. I really do.
How long have you had her?
So we've had her, what, Brad?
2 weeks.
2 weeks now? Yeah, she's been in Eric's house.
Yeah. Okay, let's go over the SNP numbers real quick. I'm not going to read them out, but I'm just wanting everybody to get a picture of how SNP shaped up this year. So you'll see we spent a total of about $81,000 public spay neuter this year.
That's the difference between the yellow and the blue?
Dog and cat. Yellow's a dog. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's not labeled. It is labeled within the columns, but it's not labeled at the top. So we've got about this, essentially the same funding this year from the county. I don't know what Hendersonville has put in. But our biggest hurdle right now, and I don't know how it's going to work out, but as you all know, we use Humane Alliance to do all our public spay neuter surgeries. And they're going through some restructuring. You're probably aware of this.
I could comment on this too, actually. Brother Wolf's working on bringing in a mobile clinic. So we're
okay. yeah, and that's I've been brainstorming too, and we've even thought about using mobile, but it's really going could be crippling to us. And I think, and I don't want to speak on behalf of Humane Alliance, and Audrey, you may have some insight, but I get the feeling they're a training center, and I think that they have been a real asset to the community and surrounding counties in providing this low-cost spay neuter, and I think it's gotten to be maybe a burden on them, and I think they're wanting to gear themselves more back, scale back, and be focused more on just training. So I don't know. So they've scaled back the amount of surgeries they're allotting us now. So we'll see how that affects us. We may go to a voucher system with local vets again if... Look at Dr. Jewell. to the ones that would want to do that, I'm sure you were involved in that at one time or other. I think every vet in the county has taken their turn at it. But so we've batted that around the mobile thing. But even as far as possibly creating our own clinic in Henderson County. That's been talked about, not recently, but before we even launched this program. That was one of the things I kind of looked into. So, because spay neuter is where it's at. That's what we really need to focus on more than anything. But that's it. Anybody got questions about the SNP program? Or
did everybody that presented dog or cat get the service, or were there denials?
There's no income... No.
So there were 747 dogs and 746 cats, and
that's
it.
Wow,
that's
awesome.
Ironic that those numbers were that close together. Yeah. They're usually lopsided.
No, it's half and half.
Yeah.
So,
eight cats.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Are both of them?
We'd have them running rampant.
Oh, male. Well, okay, the total. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. What do you have about the scheduling? Are you ready?
Okay. Whenever you are.
The dangerous dog hearings?
Well, Mr. Walsh and I had discussed this earlier this year. And
last time it just kind of...
Yeah, it did. And Catherine wasn't here, and she had kind of asked me about it in an email one time, and I didn't know... if we need to revisit maybe how we schedule or do it, the scheduling of our dangerous dogs. Really, the only way it would work is how Jack and I had discussed it at one point, where everybody would be assigned certain months, and we would block out a couple days a month for dangerous dog. A hearing may come up, a hearing may not come up. But either way, we know who's going to be there, we know when, and the attorney would be able to know, and You know,
what lock out a couple of days a month, but yeah. there's a short window that you have to hear.
10 days.
10 days. But 2 days a month would catch that. Yeah, I think so. That would capture those concerns.
What's our time constraints, Brad?
10 day and
no, I'm sorry. I'm talking about the hours of the day that we can actually conduct these hearings.
Well, if we do it, if we pre-plan far enough, I can get this meeting room. I don't know how far people have it booked out, but I don't think I could negotiate that just fine.
Are we constrained any by Jason's schedule or time?
Not at all.
Okay.
Jason is not with the Sheriff's Department anymore.
Oh. Okay.
Right. Well, I don't even know if he's part time now, Paul. No. But anyway, he's not.
Part time.
Okay.
That was a loaded question.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
So,
it's
but
availability.
Yeah. Okay.
Right now, it's part
available. But he's not available for these. So,
in any future position, and the reason I'm asking is because you know we obviously are able to plan quarterly to come in here at 5:30 in the evening. And, you know, I'm not suggesting all of our dangerous dog hearings need to be second shift or anything, but I do think it's my opinion that with some of the folks who are on the board that have working hours.
Oh, well, absolutely. Yeah, they'll be thrown back later in the day. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
We won't have the luxury of doing them earlier, and that's fine, you know.
I know you tried to accommodate me when I said I can't really do anything, you know, till 3 o'clock.
And I mean, you guys are great. It's easy to schedule these guys with these hearings with you guys a lot more. If somebody had told me I was going to have to do this, I'd be like, "What are you kidding me?" But everybody's
great group.
Yeah. Everybody here has pretty nimble schedules and are easy to work with. But is that going to be the same 3-4 years from now? You know. So it is something that we may have to go to. Right now we might not have to, but what it would look like is that you would essentially be responsible to cover these dates. And it doesn't mean you'd have to be there. You might, you know, you may be have one and you might get an opportunity to go on a trip and say, hey, I want to flip-flop with somebody. And, you know, but it would make it easier for me, but it doesn't matter to me how we do it, because I can do it just like we've been doing it, or if we want to try to do it, at least, you know, if y'all wanted to, we could come back with like a mock schedule for the next meeting and just see what it looks like. But pretty much if people aren't willing to block out days and stuff, if they're not wanting to do that, then this will not work.
I think that's a great idea, and I shared this with Brad. John and I come off in a year or two, well, really just shy of about a year and a half. We come off the board because we will have fulfilled 3 terms, and we're both, our schedules are flexible. But in the future, looking toward the future, if you get people who are full-time employed,
right.
I think if they take the position on the committee, not acknowledging that they not only will attend these meetings, but also they're responsible for
take a month. And
again, for example, if Donna signs up for something, her family has a vacation, you know, if she called, you know, myself, for example, or anybody else, you know, with a little more availability, I mean, it's certainly, but at least it would be something that we would know about.
And we could also, you know, block out 4 people in those things. That gives, you know, that gives
the
you.
The reason I was at another concern of mine for possibly doing them, you know, later on in the afternoon, evening, you know, after work, you know, I can recall the last 2 dangerous dog appeals that I've been a member of. I can recall that there were no witnesses for one side or the other. The county didn't have a witness because they were at work.
Right.
Okay. There was a plaintiff, somebody who had appealed, but they had people that we would have liked to have talked to as a committee, you know, or as a board for that hearing. We would have loved to have talked to them, but again, they were working, and you know, folks who don't get off till 3, 4, 5 o'clock, maybe they can make a 5:30 meeting such as this, but the chances of them, you know, being able to do that during the day may be a whole lot slimmer. And I know, you know, I know I personally would have loved to have heard from other people about some of the circumstances that have happened in a few of these. Mm-hmm. You know, the more information we have as a board on things like that, the more informed of a decision we can make. And I would feel much better about some of the decisions we do make if we did have those people, if they were available to come in.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But it'll be interesting to see if, I mean, I've never really felt that many of these people would have come in if they could have. I mean, it's...
Well, you could look at it from another aspect. You know, if you're truly worried about a dog in your community and it hurts your kids, you're going to get off work to come in here and make sure.
That's not necessarily so.
You don't
not necessarily. I mean, you say, yes, you would, but, I mean, someone, you know, if you don't have the time off, I mean, you could easily be fired because...
Exactly.
Or drop pay or...
I mean, yeah.
If you go against an employer's attendance policy and everything, who's going to risk their job? You know, who's going to risk their job? Like my wife, they do a point system on how many days they miss and all that.
Right.
You know, if she was down on points or whatnot and there was only like she only had a couple of points left until she got fired, I can promise you she's not going to miss an afternoon for something like that, you know?
It's kind of odd that this would come up. I just got a text from the one of the city officers that's doing the animal enforcement, and he was asking me if it was okay if one of the bite victims came to the deeming court case. I told him absolutely that it was better if they did actually come in.
They should be, that should
be
mentioned.
Are they not informed that they should have witnesses and bring their witnesses?
We try our best to get them in, but we have had situations where folks just couldn't be here. Most of them do want to be here. They want to tell their side of the story, and they want to, especially
so if we did it in a, you know, in that fashion like we were just talking about, we would have to do them later in the day anyway. I mean, that's...
Yes.
Is he considered
public? Some of these dangerous dog cases, we're restrained by a 10-day period.
Right.
That's very quick. So the person who owns the canine has done whatever's alleged happened. The ball's in their court. So they could come in on the last day and appeal that. Well, the people who have been attacked, a victim of that incident, they don't know it's coming. They don't know if somebody's going to appeal a case or not appeal a case until it's done. And from that time frame, so when they notify Brad, Brad has to set up a committee, notify us of the date and the time, and then we have to notify the people who have gotten attacked or a victim. So you've gone from a 10-day span for the victim to about a 2-day span for a victim, if you're lucky.
Yeah.
We've had some, and you guys do a great job on this, but you guys have busy schedules, you have lives. He might not know until like the day before, okay, it's going to be at 3 o'clock tomorrow, we got enough people. Well, that gives whoever the case manager is, whatever deputy or police officer is in charge of the case, to try to contact that person and get them in here for a hearing.
Don't they have to know, though? They have the same 10-day. They don't know when it's going to hit,
well,
but they still, 10 days is the outside.
I'm sorry?
10 days is the outside. If somebody...
So if I appeal, you deem my dog dangerous, I have 5 days to appeal the notice.
Okay.
And then after that 5 days, you set up your hearing date within 10 days.
Right. So the people who were the victims would have the same...
The only thing the victims know is that it's a possibility for a 15-day window, you may have to come in for a hearing. Can't tell you what date, can't tell you what time. We can't even tell you it's going to happen.
Well, but the owner of the dog doesn't have the total knowledge either, because
the owner of the dog has a dog inspector.
Well,
the victim's a little bit different. The owner of the dog has the control over a lot of this stuff, where the victim does not. So, but you're giving the victim, who is the victim, a 2-day window to get time off of work or cancel a vacation, to go through whatever needs to go through to come in here and make a meeting at 3 o'clock in the evening. Or, and our last dangerous dog meeting, we've gone 3 hours on these things. You know, we've had people wait in the lobby 3 or 4 hours before they come in here to testify on their case. So that, you know, yeah, and being the victim on it, you know, you got to, that's a little different. That's a little different. My dog came up and ate you, or bit you, and you were the victim, and now I'm making you delay your vacation, come back from your vacation, not giving you a good advance notice to get in here for a thing, you're a victim again.
And it sounds like maybe the victim's rights here need to be...
They're restricted, is what I'm saying.
Sometimes
the victims can't come in. They got jobs, they got stuff going on. They get very little notice before the hearing.
I used to work for UPS, and I hate adding to anybody's job. But let me ask you this much, because I know you keep notes. I know you keep notes on every incident that happens like that. At the time that you deem someone's dog dangerous, okay? At the time you deem the dog dangerous, and you know there's a victim, okay? What's the possibility of adding to your notes just at that time that you deem the dog dangerous? And I know you're letting the victim know, okay, they've got 5 days to appeal this. They may not. We don't know. If they do, then we'll have the hearing within 10 days. Okay, you know the date you're going to deem the dog dangerous, and you already know 5 days from then they may or may not. Could you possibly maybe just ask the victim that when you're talking to them, said, okay, between this date and this date, we would have to have a hearing sometime during this time. What would your availability be? Would you be available to come in the evening or morning, or, you know?
I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. That could be done. We tell the people, whoever owns the dog, they got 5 days to appeal it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so they know that appeal process. So the answer is yes. Once we know the case has been appealed, we can call and say, hey, this case has been appealed. But now you're getting into where you have to give them a date and time.
My thing is,
if we're going to, I think we need to be a little forgiving on the victim. Requiring them to come in and being so hasty on them if they don't. If we're giving them a day to, or two to try to get, some cases we get, and Brad has it set up like quick. We know, hey, look, in 7 days we're having a hearing. You know, you can get somebody some notes on that.
Yeah.
But some of these other cases, you know, the time frames will slow for a bit.
You went ahead of me, though, from what I was saying, though, is that, you know, you're talking with the victim basically at the same time you're deeming the dog dangerous with the other party. You're still in contact with them usually at about that time? Are you not?
The dog, we go out and investigate the bite, mm-hmm. whatever the incident was. We write the report up off of that. We finish our investigation. Then we come out with the conclusion whether or not we want to deem the dog or not. And then if we deem the dog, we deal all that with the owner of the dog.
Okay.
The victim would know, yes, we're going to deem the dog dangerous, and no, we're not going to deem the dog dangerous.
I think all the more reason why, if you had specific calendar dates that we were going to have a hearing, you know, they would know it was on the calendar. And if Reggie bit my dog, and you handed them a citation, and you said, Jack, if they appeal, the next hearing is going to be the 20th of December. Because that's when we came in.
Okay, here's where I'm going, though. We're missing the point. What I'm trying to get at here, if Vince comes and says, Jack, they're going to appeal such and such date, whatever. What's your time availability at that time?
But if I know I got to be here on the 20th, I'm going to make arrangements to be here on the 20th at 4:30.
But not everybody can do that. That's where we're going.
It's far enough
if
out.
You got far enough out and you know it's on the calendar. Trust me, my wife, when our dog got bit, she would not miss that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, if she was going to be here for that hearing.
And it would be, even if you did that type of system, there would be the possibility that the hearing would be set for 2 days after the...
Could be.
You could have a limitation on that. You could have at least... a 10-day window.
Yeah.
This court system.
Well, no, it wouldn't be at least a 10-day window if you had them preset, though. Not
well,
necessarily.
You had them
it could be a 2-day. It could be a 3-day. It could be.
It could be
if
10 days.
You had it preset on the 15th, and today was the 12th. You could have it preset that it couldn't be that soon. They would have to roll over until the next month.
But then you'd be out of the 10-day.
Well, that's where you'd have to change a 10-day.
You can't change it. That's state law.
Change the
2,
it'll just be
the 10-day state law.
Okay.
What court setting is so much different than court,
right,
where you have attorneys and you can have continuations and that type of thing.
Right.
They're not ready for that case. Or if the victim's not available.
But the difference is they've got another avenue after this board. They can appeal it to Superior Court.
And some of them might have that in their minds. Well,
those guys don't
I'm not
going
to go to
five.
That because however, whatever the outcome is, I can.
Right.
Except for the victim. Can the victim appeal it? Okay, so then if the victim has more reason to.
I don't know how the victim would
civilly
appeal.
Sue.
The victim would have more.
Right, but here's where I'm going with this. I know that the county is the one that oftentimes needs the victim there to help make the case.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start with that premise. Okay, what if in the course of your job that you tell them, okay, you know what, if they decide to appeal, they've got 5 days. After this date right here, within the next 10, we don't know which one yet. Okay, say it's still random. We don't know which one yet. We may need you to come in. What would be your availability time-wise? In other words, do you get off at 3 or 3:30? Do we need to schedule it for 4 so you can make it? Or do you work until 5, and do we need to schedule it at 5:30 so you can make it? That's what I'm getting at. That's a question you could ask then and just have a little note saying, victim available after 3:30, you know?
But what if they were only available at 10 and we don't have the room or any of the date time set up?
And maybe
to
they
me
could
it makes more sense to Jack that on the 10th of the month and the 20th of the month or whatever, here's we're going to have dangerous dog hearings, and that person, and you can say, okay,
at 5:30.
And it's going to be at 5:30. And if you're bitten on the 11th, then if there's a hearing, it's going to be on the 20th. And then everybody just knows. It's not when are you available.
Well,
that's just doesn't make any
sense.
I'm
not supposed to be yelling out, you know, instead of having 2 dates set up, you can set 3 dates up for that one.
10th, 20th, and 30th.
Well, and I'm not trying to get you guys more days than anybody wants, trust me. But what I'm saying is if you had three days a month set up and they were split out equally, then, you know, you may have nothing this day and something lined up this day. But if we have this happen the day prior, it will make the next date.
Yes.
And I think state law just says 10 days. It doesn't say 10 business days, but say 10 calendar days. So we could interpret, that as saying business days. Then we would be able to do what you said. If we have it set for the 10th and the person appeals on the 8th or 9th, then we can say, no, we're going to set this for the next one, not the 10th. We're going to set it for the 20th. Count the weekends as part of the 10-day count.
Clarification on that. Make sure that it is 10. Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say.
I know. We can't make it one or the other.
But it's tied into
something.
Well,
we can
else.
Interpret it. And
we did on this last
one. Didn't do it right.
Yeah.
I bet it's tied in somewhere else.
So.
I speak for the victim and for us as well. I mean, we have to deal with, work with to try to keep it open-minded. If people can't show up for their hearing because they're the victim, and then they're being again hit with something else to restrain their job or something like that, and they can't make it. I love it when my victims come in because you're right; they help me out.
Oh, definitely. They help us all out.
Some of Vince's victims are even fake sometimes.
It seems to be very popular.
Yeah, fake news is pretty popular.
You know, so it helps us out, obviously, to have them here, but there again, you know, with the time restraints and stuff on them, sometimes it's just not easy.
Yeah. But they do have the back that they can't do the appeal unless the dangerous
the
dog appeals.
The sheriff can do the appeal to the Superior Court. Case that you guys, if you guys deem no, the sheriff can appeal that to Superior Court.
Okay.
The process for doing a case in the Superior Court is very I mean, very, very in-depth.
It's much more of a bureaucracy than we are.
It's well, and I don't mind going to court, but it's a lot different.
And, no, and you can go and then not be heard that day.
Well, no, you may not get heard for 6 months.
I know that.
Here.
If you go through that process, does the dog being deemed get reset as the dog? Or
the dog stays deemed until the...
Till you guys are finished in Superior Court?
We've got a case right now going to Superior Court. Uh-huh. Those dogs are deemed dangerous until we get through.
Even if a board like this has overturned it, right?
That's a good question.
I would think so.
I would too.
I would think so that it would still.
I would think that would set it back in place
because of the appeal.
Yeah, I think that would set it back in
place.
About
what happens in a regular court setting.
Yeah. I mean, those are things generally we don't tend to.
As far as the victim goes, if the victim did want to appeal and they turned to us for it, we would be bound to take that to do the appeal form to go to the Superior Court. And
they do have the right to appeal.
Okay.
Certainly. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's not always true, you know. I mean, like it.
More an hour, yes. I believe they would have a right.
The victim, I thought that would have to be brought on by the Sheriff's Department, right?
We deem the dog dangerous.
I guess Paul's saying if I came to you and said I would like for you to appeal this, I don't agree with this decision this board made. Can you go forward with something else?
I'd have to check into that a little closer, but I believe we would be bound to, as you being the victim, either that or we would have to refer you to your own attorney. One of the two, yeah. I don't know if it'd probably be more than civil. It'd still probably go to Superior Court, but it may go to Superior Civil Court or it may go to I go right into civil.
In our particular case, the dog that bit our dog was deemed dangerous. It was appealed by the owner of the dog. The board.
We upheld the.
You upheld the sheriff's decision to deem the dog dangerous. They were allowed to keep the dog in custody. They were supposed to be compliant with all the rules in 1610, all the stuff that we read about. That was December 9th of 09. On June the 30th of 16, on June the 30th of 17, the dog broke free, bit another person, and was then euthanized. But they were in the process of appealing this board's decision that their dog wasn't dangerous to Superior Court.
Well, but once the dog broke free from where?
Their house.
Were they under the...
That the dog was supposed to be confined on a leash, all the stuff, but the dog broke through the door, got to the street, took a lady down, bit her in the street, and then once they knew that happened, then they pulled back their appeal to Superior Court, and that never got heard because the dog wound up being euthanized at the shelter. They wound up surrendering that dog back because...
And their homeowners, they weren't even supposed to have a dog of that size.
Not that big for the Homeowners Association,
They got two again.
Yeah, I know. I know. Did y'all know that they had two more?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
Yeah.
I found out from the guy.
Yeah, I got a video.
So,
where are we at?
Do y'all want to make a motion for us to come up with some kind of a schedule? Because if we're going to do it, I say we don't wait till the next meeting to do it. Yeah. We just go ahead and do it. Not tonight. I can, or if I have a volunteer that wants to help me draft something up, you know. Mm-hmm. To put something in place and then email it out. We don't have to determine the schedule in a public meeting. Right.
You're always looking for more work. I worry about you.
Well, no, I just want to do what you guys are wanting to do.
I think it makes a lot of sense. I like the idea. I think it makes sense. Everybody kind of knows what's going on. It's easier for them to tell the victims.
And you're not. And you're not especially bound to that. If you get somebody that you can switch with.
Yeah.
And
it's
like this one. I can make that happen.
And I don't even know if you need to make a motion for us to do that because there's nothing that really
Not really. It's just a matter of just making up a schedule. I think my biggest goal before I leave this board is I want to see Dr. Joel be on one of those just once.
I think he's been on one.
Talking smack about you, man.
I hear you.
I think he's been. You've done one, haven't you?
Have you done one of the danger?
Oh, you have.
Or you can just answer all of our questions about our dogs.
Okay.
Well, the only thing with regard to a motion is that anybody reviewing these minutes will know that as a committee we agreed
that this
is the way we would proceed and that the committee members would have an obligation.
I would like to see it, yes, written out. I mean, what kind of time frame are we talking about? How many commitments are you asking us to, you know?
I think it would have to be, like somebody said, like the 10th and 20th.
And the 30th to cover the...
But how many months of the year are we talking about?
Every 10 days.
Every month.
Was it your cycle would be like two...
No, you would be obligated every month.
No.
Okay, that's
no.
what I'm asking.
Oh, okay.
Each individual person, how many particular
Maybe two
months,
months
are you... Would you is,
two,
how's this going to
break
down?
I thought it was
Maybe
four,
two,
four
months.
Two, three, four,
okay,
six,
okay, well, it's like this. That we have to have three... We have to have three people.
And it has to be... Whoever that position has to be.
Now we've blocked four people into each of those blocks.
And I'd also, because I don't work, I mean, I do other things, I would gladly be a backup. I mean, it's not going to be 100% backup.
Always available.
And that's always great with you guys right now. But as Patty mentioned, you know, this board evolves and changes. And
right, but that's always going to happen.
We may not have as many, you know, people with flexible schedules as you guys right now.
And an adjustment might have to be made.
Yeah, I mean, just work with those circumstances when they present themselves.
And I would tell you, I mean, there has to be one veterinarian sitting on this board. So that veterinarian, unless he's retired, is not going to be here at 3 o'clock.
No. I think we're talking at least meet 5:30. 5:30.
Yeah. And if you knew well enough in advance.
It would be like this meeting.
You could kind of plan.
Yeah, you
could plan. Do you think?
What's that?
Could you plan if you knew well enough in advance?
If I know well enough in advance, and if it was in April,
I don't think so.
On the 10th and the 20th, to know at 5:30, then
we've had two.
Exactly. It may not.
The kids have softball schedules going to be like next spring. I mean, there's stuff. It's life. I get it.
Basically, where we're at right now, then. We're talking about having Patty's volunteered to work with Brad on this as far as setting up a schedule to where we can rotate in and out on this. And you know, like you say, you have to have a chair or a vice chair, so obviously that would swap back month to month. But you know, again, either one of us would be available if necessary. So basically, what we're talking about, what we have on the table right now, is Patty's volunteered to help Brad come up with a schedule, and that way it would alternate, rotate people in and out off of the dangerous dog appeal process and everything, and that way everybody could take a turn doing it. And if you couldn't make it, of course, there's people who would stand in for you. So that's what we're asking right now. So do I hear a motion for Patty to help Brad come up with a schedule so we can all rotate off the dangerous dog appeals?
I move that we create a schedule.
Do I have a second?
A second.
All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the ayes have it, so that's what we'll do then.
And one last thing, if there are any months that are, like, you know, your family's going out on Hawaiian vacation, would you let Brad know so that we don't schedule something and then find out that, you know, October's bad?
So you're starting like
Well, I think that the first step is to get clarity on the 10 days. Is that 10 calendar days, 10 business days? So that's going to greatly affect our model. The other thing is we may just plug in variables in the thing and send it out and let everybody say, well, I can cover these days. We may have some people vying for the same places, but we'll just have to we're going to have to do the schedule first, then we'll have to put people in place.
And you should be able to project out far enough ahead of time anyway for those of us who do have a schedule.
But I would say for the next couple of months, we're going to do it like we've always done it because it's going to take a little bit to get a schedule in place.
Well, so I guess by the time we have our October meeting and everything, we should have something in place. And if we need to,
and if we don't, then the October meeting might be a time for us to everybody say, "Hey, well, I'll take this spot. I'll take this spot. That spot."
Yeah. So okay, that's fair enough then. Super. Does anybody have anything else that they can think ahead that maybe we might need to talk about at the October meeting? Anything? I know we're going to, let's see, snip down. What else is there? Was there anything else?
What is the status of everything that you guys redrafted in the ordinance?
Next week I go to the Board of Commissioners to present.
Okay.
The 18th, if anybody wants to be there. 18th at 9 o'clock, I think. So.
Anybody have anything else?
Will you get back to us on that?
Yeah, I'll let you guys know. Yeah.
All right. Well, this time I'd like to ask someone to make a motion to go out of public hearing. Second?
I'll second.
All right. We're now out of public hearing. Thank you very much, everybody coming.